everyone. Welcome back to The Office. And we're just going to jump right into this episode today because it is so jam-packed with all kinds of things because it's our first, like, quote-unquote, super-sized episode is what I saw on Dunderpedia, how they kind of worded that. It's the first time that the episode is 28 minutes instead of the standard 22. So we have an extra 6 glorious minutes of The Office to talk about, which means we probably have an extra, I don't know, 30 minutes of content. What do you think, Micah?
Yeah. 30 to 2 hours extra.
Yeah. Oh, it's a big episode. It's so funny in the beginning and then so much happening in the end. And, oh, it's just it's all there.
It's very, very good this casino night. The Lady Luck has been our mistress because we are lucky enough to be basked in the glory of this episode and all that it entails, because it entails quite a bit, Tiff. There's a lot that happens in this one.
Oh yeah, it's a season ender, right? So we're closing out the second season with this episode.
We've been recording this show now for a while. We're at the end of season 2. Season 3 starts soon, and that's wild to me. Good job, Tiff. Good job.
I know. High five.
High fives across the internet.
There that's it is. Right. That's a pretty far reach, but it's very great. I mean, you're only in Chicago, right? So it's
good. Yes. Chicago, Illinois. My home away from home. Because it's not my home. Let's break into this.
So yeah, we kind of opened. I want to go through this episode a little bit more chronologically than we have been, because a lot of the meat and potatoes happens at the end, the second half of this episode. But a lot of the comedy and classic bits that happen in The Office happened in the beginning of the episode, and I don't want to miss any of them, because some of them are my ultimate favorites, and I do want to at least touch on them, and then we can start getting into the psychoanalytic nature of what went down at the end of this episode.
Perfect. That works for me, too.
So we start off with Michael explaining casino night.
Tonight, the Scranton Business Park is having casino night, and we are converting our warehouse into a full-blown gambling hall. And I know it's illegal in Pennsylvania, but it's for charity. And I consider myself a great philanderer.
He loves being a great philanderer. Yes. Which is one of my favorite Michael word flubs ever, especially in relation to this episode, because it coordinates so well with what happens.
Yeah, he ends up being a philanderer.
Yes.
And that's so great. It like, that's so clever. That's just so clever of the writers.
Yeah. And the writer is Steve Carell. Steve Carell wrote this episode.
What?
So I looked back, and I only looked back through all the episodes in this season, and he hadn't written any of them so far. So I don't know about the first season. I can't speak to that, but I don't think he did either. So this one's done by Steve Carell himself. And for anyone out there who is maybe a younger listener and doesn't know, the word Michael was looking for was
philanthropist.
Philanthropist. Yeah. I was like, now I'm going to say it wrong. Yeah. Philanderer, meaning having relationships with many people at the same time, versus philanthropist, which is someone who is charitable and continually donates to charities. So we have two different meanings of words that can very easily get flip-flopped. And Steve Carell does that brilliantly as Michael Scott.
Now, knowing that this episode was written by him, it's so clear to me, because Michael is so Michael in this episode. Mm-hmm. He is Michael to the max. And I think that it is probably a testament to Steve Carell's writing to make that a possibility. And also, I think Dwight is very Dwight in this as well.
Yeah, he comes in a tux, and it can't even be a normal tux.
Right. Like, it's not.
It can't just be a tux.
Why can't it just be a tux, Dwight? Why?
But no, it's a family heirloom that his grandfather was buried in, as so he says. But I want to bring up to you, there's some discrepancy, because towards the end of the series, we find out that the Schrutes have an interesting burial practice in their family. I don't want to say too much without giving stuff away, but needless to say, a shotgun is usually involved after the passing of a relative. So I'm surprised that this tuxedo isn't full of holes.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I don't think it would have survived a Schrute family lore funeral. So yeah, but yet here it is, and Dwight insists it is his grandfather's tux that he was buried in.
Yes,
well, not just his grandfather's tux; his grandfather was buried in it.
The tux one's grandfather is buried in. And we quickly go from, so like, again, when we're talking about this kind of being packed to the brim, to the gills with all of this stuff, we go from one moment of Dwight talking about this tux his grandfather was buried in to, Pam saying that she's going to really do well at a game of chance. And Dwight, of course, is like, you can't do well at a game of chance because it's a game of chance. And so chance keeps you from
Dwight's
doing
like
well.
The original well actually.
Yes,
person,
he
you know?
Is. Oh, my gosh. He's every well actually's mascot.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim is like, well, now I got to mess with him because, of course, he's being a turd. So I got to mess with him. And
this is a good messing with, though.
Yeah,
this one's
no, I mean,
a good one.
Yeah, Dwight's being a turd. And so Jim is like, I got to mess with him because he's being a turd. And I think that it's great. And this is the most pure, most adorable, most incredible, like mental connection slash like meant to be together slash perfect, pranky duo moment between mm-hmm. Dwight. Sorry, between Jim and Pam.
Totally agree.
It's so good. And
because he didn't even have to ask her.
Yeah, that's the thing. He didn't
do
have to
something
ask
about
her.
This.
She winked, like she knew what was, you know, she was gonna do. If you haven't seen the episode, Pam just basically uses an umbrella to move the coat rack that's far away from her while Jim pretends to use telekinesis to move mm-hmm. the coat rack.
And she brilliantly displays that in like a little confessional. And it's so funny. And she is like she's acting the part perfectly with how she's pretending to be surprised by the coat rack moving. The thing about this moment is Roy is there.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And it's way different than the usual Jim Pam pranky duo, which usually happens sans Roy, you know, like he's gone. So they're able to kind of have more of their friendship out in the open. And usually when Roy is around, they both act differently towards each other. But this time Roy's there and they're still acting like they're high-fiving across the room kind of duo of we're going to play a prank on Dwight. Mm-hmm. Even though he's there. So I don't know if that's a testament to how comfortable they're getting around each other, how they don't care, how maybe they forgot Roy was there. I don't know. It could be a number of little literary excuses that you could write into that in your own brain. But it is a thing, right?
Yeah. Has the thing happened where Roy is talking to Jim and says that, I think so.
Yeah, it was
that
during
was back
Boys
in
and Girls.
Oh,
was it Boys and Girls during when Roy was like, oh, I know you guys are friends. We're cool.
Yeah, right? He's like, I know you are friends. It's so great that you talk to her so she doesn't come home and talk to me is essentially
right,
what he says.
Yes, yes.
Because he's the worst. and yeah, that ends up being... So I think that it's just like now they feel like they can be a little bit more... play aroundy with each other. And I think it's also mm-hmm. a matter of comfort as well. And we see like Jim is also helping Pam out with the wedding a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we find out that Roy does not want to pick the band or he decided to focus more on the bachelor party as
of
Pam
course.
Puts it. And that is one of those like, it's a small display of selfishness because he's focusing on the part of the wedding that only has to do with himself and not any part of the wedding that has to do with them as a couple and making a decision together. And so therefore, like now Pam's doing it and it's a chore and she brings it up to Jim. And when this happens, it's like, this is why Jim is so endearing to everybody because he'll take something that seems like a chore and that Pam was kind of down about like, oh, this was a job that I wasn't supposed to do and now I have to do it. And he makes it fun. He makes it into a game and she, you know, giddily runs off with him to go watch the videos because he makes it sound and into a fun thing. And that's what like you should be feeling with someone when you're making these kind of decisions. Like she should be doing that with Roy. Like she should be feeling that with Roy. And Roy should be making her feel like that if it was right. And it's not, right? So like that's one of those things. It's like, oh, that's why this friendship works. And Jim's so great because he can turn anything into a game. And mm-hmm. we see that throughout. That's why he always pranks Dwight, right? It's essentially him turning all of work into a game.
Yeah, to get through it himself and to, mm-hmm. and in some cases, help Pam get through her day. he's very good at that. And, you know, there's no sort of, I don't know, downside to that, I guess is what I'm saying. Like it's just a, it's a fun thing and it's a good thing and it's a pure thing.
Yeah. And it's innocent. They're yeah, not, exactly. Yeah. It's innocent. It's an innocent thing that they were doing together and it was fun and it's nice friendship thing to do and totally see no problem with it. It's just nice.
It's just see nice.
Their you see their bond. Yeah.
It's just nice. Okay, folks. It's just nice.
And then we find out that Kevin is in the band in a police cover band named Scrantonicity.
That's Kevin on the drums.
Which is great. I like seeing that little side of Kevin. We see a whole bunch of things about Kevin in this episode, which at first, or maybe throughout, I don't know. I have that question. I'll put it out there to you. His personality reveals in this episode feel a little out of character, mm-hmm. or at least they don't mesh with kind of the do-do-do character that we see him playing most of the time.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But I think that what we start to notice with Kevin over time is he's mostly comfortable with letting people underestimate him because it means that he doesn't have to sort of do as much. And mm-hmm. like it's, he doesn't have the energy to try to make people think of him any differently than they already do. Or he doesn't have the awareness, one of the two. It's like he doesn't care that people in many ways, you know, see him as underperforming or what have you. Mm-hmm. And he also might not be completely aware of how much they do. But as we start to get to know him, we realize that he's more than what he lets on. And I also think that it's a matter of the show evolving and the producers realizing that every character on the show has value and that there are fans mm-hmm. out there for every character on the show. So he starts to get more, more lines and starts to have more of a story. And so I think it's a
more
mixture
screen time.
Of, exactly,
yeah. He gets more of a background. Of yeah. I like the way you put that. I think that that's completely right. We do get to see Michael being a philanderer in this episode because, well, accidentally, really. And I have to point out that in this episode, he's pretty smooth when it comes to asking out the ladies.
Yeah.
He did a good job. It's actually surprising. And I guess you had to have him do a good job because you needed them to say yes. Mm-hmm. He accidentally gets two dates for casino night. And the
Jen
first
Levinson,
one,
I presume.
Yeah, there's this nice little tidbit about Pam that she holds Michael's calls for him to say something kind of dumb first, and then he'll act normal until she puts on like the real call. I love that little bit. And it kind of shows that she's really good at her job, right? Because she's being a good receptionist to the person she's receptioning and helping him save himself from himself. And so she's making him look good without really no one sees her doing it. You know, like that's always the best job when you don't, not the best job for the person, but it's almost like when Marco fixes my computer and I don't notice it working because it just works.
Yeah.
When really he'd put a lot of work in to get it to just work and for me not to notice it. This is Pam putting in a whole bunch of work for, so no one notices kind of what a fool that
Michael's
can be.
Failings, right?
Yeah. So she sweeps those under the rug for him very nicely with her phone etiquette. But we see him ask out Jan, and he's kind of smooth about this. He compliments her. He mentions how she might be feeling. Like he puts in all these little niceties, and I'm fairly impressed. I was like, I would say yes to that. And then he does the same thing when Carol calls up just for some routine paperwork stuff, and he ends up asking her to casino night too. Like, oh, come on down. We'll sign the papers. It'll be fun. Like, I was like, whoa. He's really doing it. And he's because he wasn't feeling the pressure. He wasn't actually asking them out. He wasn't date Mike yet.
Exactly. Not date Mike.
He was just his that calm Michael Scott that we see when he doesn't realize what's happening to him. And then all of a sudden it comes crashing down when he finds out he has two queens coming to casino night. So I love that part. We also have a really good discussion out in the workroom about charities and where the money's going for casino night.
Okay, you know what? I will not donate my winnings to Comic Relief since apparently it doesn't exist. I am going to donate to Afghanistanis with AIDS.
Nope, I think you mean the aid to Afghanistan.
No, I mean Afghanistanis with AIDS.
Afghani.
What?
Afghani.
That's a dog.
No, that's Afghan.
That's a shawl.
Wait, canine AIDS?
No, humans with AIDS.
Who has AIDS?
Guys, the Afghanistananis.
You know what? No, no.
And this is another one of those things that I think is, you know, the very good The Office stuff.
Yeah.
Because we have the...
He's sitting up on the reception desk to, like, hold court.
Let's have a moment. And
it's got a rap session.
Everybody in the office, it's that sort of conference room vibe where everybody in the office has comments and is sharing their thoughts, and it's going back and forth very quickly. There's so much in this little part that just makes me laugh every time, and it's so good. I love these scenes with everybody sort of responding back and forth to each other.
Also, I find it very funny that Oscar brings up his disappointment in the Boy Scouts, that it's Oscar that brings that up. So I don't know if that's a little nod to the practices, or I don't know if it's still relevant. It probably is. I'm not sure. The previous nature of the Boy Scouts in that not being very inclusive.
Yeah.
And having Oscar be the one to bring that up.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It was interesting.
I'd even considered that, but yeah, that could be. And
yeah, because he was down on it. He's like, let's give it to a charity that actually deserves it, because obviously he's not feeling so good about donating to the Boy Scouts of America because of probably some of their practices, especially at the time.
And also, I just think in general, they're like way better charities that need the money more than an organization that's like in the United States, which is already a first world country that for the most part is filled with folks from middle class families. You know what I mean? There's like charities that send food to people over the, you know, across the country, or I mean, you know, out of the United States and stuff that would be much better helped.
That's the thing. Well, when that's the funny thing about charities in general, just a quick, you know, PSA here. It's just like there's always a better charity. You know, like everyone can always say, like, this one deserves it more. Oh, that one deserves it more. Well, pets deserve it more because they can't talk. Well, kids deserve it more because they're kids and they're human. Like,
you can
keep going and going and going and like having this competition. But you do get this wonderful confessional montage of the little reveals about each person and how they would decide to spend this like bonus money that they would get at the end of casino night to pick a charity of their choice and what they would pick. And it so quickly derails into nonsense with what everyone's saying in their confessionals, and that's another little brilliant moment that I love, and it's worth paying attention to and really letting that sink in.
We at the end of the night are going to give the check to an actual group of Boy Scouts, right, Toby? We're gonna
actually, I didn't think it was appropriate to invite children since it's you know, there's gambling and alcohol and it's in our dangerous warehouse and it's a school night. And, you know, Hooters is catering. You know, is that enough? Should I keep going?
Why are you the way that you are?
Do I need to keep going?
Why are you the way that you are? That's one of those office quotes that I love to use in life. And also the Afghanistan Annies. I say that and nobody understands.
Nobody
gets
it.
No one thinks it's funny.
Oh, man. That's upsetting.
I know. It's just such a funny word to say it. Guys, the Afghanistan Annies. And like, everyone's like, what are you talking about? It's okay. I can say it to you guys and you'll all know.
Yeah.
All
everybody
understand.
Out here knows. They get it.
Do we want to talk about the scene with Daryl?
Yes. Yeah. That Dink and Flicka.
Which, honestly, super white girl over here. I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm so out of the cool.
Thing is that none of these words are actual words that anyone in the Black community, in the African-American vernacular English community use. And so he's teaching Michael a bunch of fake phrases to make Michael sound stupid because he thinks that they're actual phrases that people use in the community. And the same
well,
thing.
Well, then that's even better.
Yes. And it's funny that you didn't get it.
Like,
that's so funny. And he's that handshake thing was the same thing. No, that's not dap. No one does that. That's not a real thing.
See, what did you even say there? I have no idea. You're so dap. Much cooler than me.
When he's doing the handshake, that like where he holds his fingers to the side like Spock, and then they like that's not a real thing. Like dap is just like fist pound and maybe a little bit of like hand clap and like pat each other on the back kind of thing. It's not that.
I admire the cool from afar. I can't even dip my toe in that section of the population on how cool everyone is. Like, I don't get any of it.
Yeah, so that's why it's funny.
On
because
fleek, is that what I am?
On fleek.
Or my eyebrows?
Yes, your eyebrows are on fleek. That's like why you can see Daryl sort of on the edge of laughing, on the bridge of laughing, because it's funny that he's not actually, you know, doing...
Teaching him
real
anything.
Things. Yeah,
exactly. Legitimate. Yeah, okay.
Dink and Flicka.
That makes sense. Yeah. I was like, that does sound kind of cool.
It does.
I could be on the Steve Carell boat, be a total jerk about that. Like, just, I'm really glad that you explained that to me. Thank you.
You're
it
welcome.
Way funnier. Should we head on over? Oh, no, I do want to, before we go over to Casino Night, I do want to mention how Pam has that little confessional where she talks about kind of how she feels about Jim.
Jim is great. Being with him just takes away all the stress of planning my wedding.
When she says that, I'm like, you just listen to yourself. You know, like I get started kind of shouty at the television, and it is. And I know that's exactly why they put it there, to have that reaction from us, the audience, to be like, you're saying the things that are important and you're not listening to yourself. And it's just, it's all put out right there.
So now we're fully locked into Casino Night. Michael does his introduction with his glow sticks and his fireworks and whatnot. And
those little poppers that they don't even make any like spark or anything. It's
right,
just a noise.
Just a little noise. And Michael is introducing Casino Night. He has, this moment between him and the guy who's the
facility manager.
Thank you. Facilities manager. Wow. I could not think of that. Where once again, he's being ableist, which is great. But the main thing here is watching Dwight try to sort of, help Michael not run into both Carol and Jan at the same time because both queens are at Casino Night. Unfortunately, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, we do. We see a lot of back and forth and awkward stuff between Carol and Michael and Jan. And we have like this love triangle thing, which kind of for later on in the episode towards the end, it mimics the idea that there is a love triangle at all. And the love triangle being kind of between Pam, Jim, and Roy. That's kind of, I like the writing in this, in that it subtly parallels that kind of dynamic and situation without, you know, blatantly saying it. But yeah, we see Michael trying to navigate two relationships poorly, and one person, Jan, ends up getting more hurt than Carol.
It's a little like it's sad because I think Michael is, you know, whenever he was talking about like having two people there on Casino Night, he was sort of putting forth this idea that it's like, oh, this cool thing, but you could tell that he was uncomfortable with it and didn't feel it. And so he doesn't like that he has to do this, or feels that he has to do this. And it's hard for that to work. And Jan is very upset and is ready to go.
Yeah, so we get a little reveal. We get a little bit more of a non-work side of a lot of characters in Casino Night, because it's after hours. Everyone's kind of having fun. It's not officially a Dunder Mifflin event. It is a Scranton Business Park event. So it's a little bit more casual, as there's more people around. There's significant others are invited. And so we see this little moment between Jan and Jim outside, where Jan's a little bit more laid back. She's less of her corporate self outside, having a cigarette on the car hood, getting some air, I guess, some terrible smoke-filled air. And then Jim also is kind of taking a little break from the Casino Night, and they talk out there. We also see Creed stealing a whole bunch of stuff.
Creed admits that he's a kleptomaniac, essentially.
Yeah, and I enjoy that side of Creed. It totally fits with his personality. And then we see Kevin being a champion poker player, which, where did that come from? This is one of those things that I'm like, wait a minute. So Kevin's in a band, and he's this poker player. Like, who is this person outside of the office? And then he ends up losing to Phyllis accidentally. So how good of a poker player is he? But he was wearing one of those, like, hey, I won a tournament bracelets. I think yeah. that's why the camera focused in on that. I'm not up on the World Series of Poker stuff, but that's
yeah, I think it's supposed to be. Yeah. And he's, I mean, we see him, he's a big gambler, is revealed throughout the whole season. Like, he's happy to gamble about anything.
So what did they say he won? I want to read it verbatim so we know exactly. Let's see. Kevin says he won the 2002 $250,000 no limit deuce to seven draw tournament at the World Series of Poker in Vegas. Bam!
Bam!
But then he loses to Phyllis.
Yeah.
So, there we go.
Phyllis wins. She's like, oh, I got all of the same, whatever it is that she says.
I have all the clovers.
I have all the clovers. That's so cute. Phyllis is so cute. And oh, she's also so pumped that Vance Refrigeration is donating a fridge.
She is. She's very proud. Yeah. And it's adorable how proud she is of Bob Vance.
Because she made that happen.
She did. She probably hooked that all up. So, and she looks very nice. She's all dressed up. Okay. So we're going to get into this. Here we go. Roy, that we get this wonderful setup of Roy deciding to leave early because he's tired, which is strange, right? Like, it is, it seems like more of like a writerly setup for this situation than anything, like Roy leaving early from a party where everyone's kind of drinking, although maybe he found it boring because it wasn't just drinking, and he's more of a bar guy, who knows? But he leaves early, even though Pam asked him to stay, but she says goodbye and she'll stay. She's staying behind. And that's another thing. Do they drive to work separately, even though they work in the same place?
Yeah. Well, it could be.
Do they live together?
It could be that. Well, they might not live together, but it could also be that Roy's work starts a lot sooner than Pam's. Like in okay. the warehouse, I could imagine that being a like 5 a.m. kind of deal. And, mm-hmm. you know, Pam might start at 8 or something.
That's true. Okay. But that subtext, I just was curious. It just made me question. All right. So we see Jim approaching Pam. It says at night, outside, during the casino night, everyone's inside. And it appears as though he's going to tell her about the transfer based on Jan's advice that he should start to tell people that he's deciding to transfer. And instead of telling Pam that he's going to be transferring, he blurts out,
hey, can I talk to you about something?
About when you want to give me more of your money?
No,
did you want to do that now? Literally. We can go inside. I'm feeling kind of good tonight.
I was just, I'm in love with you.
What?
And Pam says that she can't. She can't. She can't. And
yeah. Pam keeps throwing up excuses.
Yeah. All these reasons I can't. And then she just really twists the knife. By saying,
you have no idea.
Don't do that.
What your friendship means to me.
Come on. I don't want to do that. I want to be more than that.
I can't.
It's like she's grasping at the cliche things to say in this situation because maybe she doesn't really want to say what she wants to say. She's putting up all of the textbook deflections. Right?
Yes, exactly.
They don't, what Jim is saying feels so genuine and to the heart. He's saying all these things that I think he's really truly feeling. You can tell by like the welling up of tears in his eyes. But Pam is saying things almost robotically,
mm-hmm.
That she's not letting herself say anything or go any further. She is trying to stop this from happening because she feels it's wrong. She's with Roy. It is a complicated situation, but I don't get the sense that she is being honest and genuine in this moment.
No. Yeah, I agree.
She's caught off guard. Like, she can't. Like, it's not a blaming thing, but that's how I read this scene.
She's wearing armor. Like, she's mm-hmm. put this armor on, and she's really just trying not to let herself be hurt and
yeah.
let, you know.
She knows he didn't misinterpret the
no.
friendship. Like, she knows none of that stuff is true. She knows that, like, the idea of, like, your friendship means so much more. Like, yes, that is true, but, like, everyone knows that there's subtext here because we just saw in the beginning of the episode her kind of revealing all of that those feelings in that subtext.
He's so great, and like I
generalized fast
because the wedding's going easily because of him, etc., etc. Oof. So that, I mean, that's what happens between them. We do see Jan get angry and leave. Mm-hmm.
She had an overnight bag. Jan did.
She did, and she just
had expectations. Oof.
So that kind of hurts a little bit.
We see a whole little series of disappointments almost at the end of this episode. But then,
it's a 1-2-3-4 punch.
Mm-hmm. But then we get this nice scene that I think the first watch through I didn't expect. I remember my feelings the first time I saw this, of the scene where Pam's back up in the office on the phone with her mom. And we get this beautiful little real one-sided conversation about how Pam actually feels. And we fill in the blanks as the listeners to this conversation. And it was such a, you know, when they cut to that scene and she's up there in the office having this conversation, because I thought it would end. Out in the parking lot, you know, with what just happened between her and Jim. And then we get this little bonus scene, and my heart jumped into my throat. I remember viscerally the first time that I watched this and how I felt about it. And it was so exciting. I mean, do you get this feeling? I know you're a hater.
No, so but this, yeah, this is a, like, yeah, I absolutely liked this moment. Like, this is the thing that they've been teasing us with for forever. Mm-hmm. And then we finally see him kiss her, and
it's so good.
Her kiss him back, like they both are kissing
she
each other
him back so yeah much.
Yeah, they're kissing each other, and it's like, oh my goodness, oh wow, it finally has happened, this thing that's been, you know, sitting for forever. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then they're just sort of like looking at each other and trying to process what's going on.
And then the episode ends, and that was a season break. Oh my gosh, when they kissed, it was so great. It's just like the payoff. I love these moments so much. I love all, like, every time, funny little life tidbit about me, every time I'm watching some sort of romantic movie and it's the time you spend the entire movie or the entire TV series waiting for the couple to come together, and when they finally do, Marco always walks in and makes some sort of snarky comment about what I'm watching. Like, I'm watching some, like, British history, like, love story thing. And he ruins it. But
darn it.
He was there for this one. He watched The Office with me, so that it didn't ruin. But
that's good.
It is. It's like, I don't know. Does everyone get that kind of feeling?
I think so.
Romantic things.
Well, not everybody. I'm sure there are people out there who don't, and they might write in and let us know that they don't, but I certainly did. And
I don't know. How could anyone not get these good vibe feelings? Like, I mean, everyone's loved somebody.
Yeah. Everyone's loved somebody, but not everybody loves, romantically. There are people who are aromantic. And this is very much a romantic expression of love. So they might not get those same feels. But yeah, I think for the most part, certainly, this is a moment that's like, oh, this is finally happening. But then there are also jaded people as well who would be like, ugh, that's not real. That could never happen.
Oh, these kind of moments get me so high. I get all like, oh, and then I'm like wired for an hour afterwards.
This is your little bump that you need to
It is. And I'm just like, oh, I need to like go have a snack or watch something else. Or it's just, I'm all like,
floating on cloud nine. That's awesome.
Yeah, it makes me feel so good. I love this. I love it so much. So,
well, that is the end of the episode.
And so good.
We and the end of season two. We've done it. We're going to kick off next week with season three, Gay Witch Hunt. That'll be an exciting one to talk about.
Title.
But let's go ahead and hand out this week's Dundee.
Yes.
We are finally calling it, and we are going to go ahead and say the Michael Scott Nickname Award Contest has come to a close. This week's Dundee, the Nickety Name Award, goes to Scott Fugger. That's at Scoober1013 on Twitter. And that was for the nickname, bum, 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 Tiffany Pack. I love it so much.
It's a good one. It's a real good one.
Tiffany Pack. It's so Michael. Like, he absolutely would say that. That's such a good Michael nickname. Great work, Scott.
I hear Steve Carell.
Right? You can hear him say it. Yes. Thank you so much for sending that in to us and to all of you who submitted nicknames for the Nickety Name Contest. Scott, get on up here and accept your Dundee.
All right, macaroni and cheese, be ready to sign off this season of The Office. And,
I'm ready, Tiffany. Pack.
All right. We will we'll see you back next week at The Office for the start of season 3.
Yes. Thanks for listening. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at @tall_beats. You can also become a member of The Incomparable. By doing so, you'll get some goodies. You'll get access to a special bootleg members only feed and get access to the conference room in the special members only Slack. Also, if you have a second, go ahead and head to Apple Podcasts and leave a review or a rating. Or if you're an Overcast, you can hit that little star button to recommend an episode. And all those things help us out and get us in front of more folks who can join in with the fun.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
I don't know what to say here.
Don't spend all your chips in one place.
Perfect.